From KUAR News in Little Rock, this is a look at Arkansas news, politics, and more. Coming up.
Election day in Arkansas throughout the country. Donald Trump, no surprise, carries Arkansas. A bit bigger of a surprise, carries the nation.
Members of the Arkansas House pick their committees for the upcoming general legislative session. Democrats control at least one committee.
And a look at veterans as we record this on Veterans Day. For the week ending Friday, November 11th, 2016, this is KUAR's Week in Review podcast. I'm Michael Heplin.
I'm Jacob Kaufman.
I'm Chris Hickey.
And I'm Bobby Antizon.
That's just ahead. Well, this was a big week. A lot of decisions made that will lay the groundwork for the future of our state and our country. Of course, on election night, after a year and a half of campaigning, Donald Trump secured the presidency. And just a hint of here how the mood was as returns were coming in on Tuesday night. KUAR's David Wallace spoke with Governor Asa Hutchinson in the middle of the evening.
Governor Asa Hutchinson, it's being reported that Trump has won Arkansas. What's your reaction to that?
Well, it shows the strength of the Republican Party in Arkansas and the base that Arkansas, after really a century of being in the Democratic column, has truly shifted, and it's not going back anytime soon. That's the first significance of it. It also shows that, you know, we're part of America that values the Second Amendment, that wants to give more authority back to the states, that wants to have a strong defense against ISIS and a strong aggressive foreign policy. And so those are messages that Donald Trump conveyed that resonated in Arkansas. What would be interesting to see as to whether how that resonates down in the legislative races. I think they stand on their own. I don't think this is a national race as much as it's a personality-driven election this year. But regardless, I think we're going to have a very good night.
And indeed, it was a good night for Republicans, and generally accepted that it did impact down-ballot races. Not many surprises in Arkansas. You had Senator John Bozeman reelected. You had all four members of the House of Representatives who were reelected. But Jacob, Bobby, Chris, the three of you were out in the field. What was the mood like at the election watch parties?
Well, I can say at the Democratic watch party, things turned from kind of an excited atmosphere. I think a lot of people expected Hillary Clinton to win the presidency. Based on, you know, what polling projections had shown the week previous. As election returns came in, you know, with Florida on the East Coast, North Carolina, things turned a little more tense and worried. And up until the end, there's still kind of a level of denial as to what was happening. I think even Democratic Party Chairman of Arkansas, Vincent Insulaco, he made a speech kind of to the crowd towards the end of the night saying, well, you know, the votes still aren't all in Michigan and Wisconsin and, you know, Pennsylvania hasn't been called yet, and they were still holding out hope. But you could see on the expressions of people's faces that things weren't going their way, and things didn't go their way, just not at the presidential level, but all the way down ballot from the U.S. Senate, as you mentioned, congressional races to legislative races. I think Democrats in the state lost around 10 seats in contested races. So,
I don't think it can be overstated how shocking this election was for folks who are liberal, progressive, Democratic-leaning. Going into Election Day, several polls, and my favorite kind of polling and survey aggregator, 538, had Hillary Clinton with a pretty healthy lead. I mean, 538 had her chances of winning up around three quarters. Trump was down, you know, around 25, 28% chance of winning. Throughout the night, it started here in the central time zone around 7, 7:30. We started getting some early hints that things were going dramatically wrong for the Democrats this election night. Ohio swung pretty wildly for Trump. He ended up winning there by, I think, 9 points. Michigan, which wasn't until the waning days really talked about as a battleground state, pretty consistently throughout the night had Trump up by about 5 points. That gap ended up narrowing when some returns from Wayne County, which is the county where Detroit is located, came in. But the similar thing in Wisconsin, just surprising early returns. And again, by about 7 p.m., 7:30 Central Standard Time, the moods started getting odd. I think the text messages started getting they became more frequent. And the Republican Party, where I was at, you started seeing people giving high fives. Now, you had not seen that before. I think the Republicans who showed up at the Embassy Suites in West Little Rock were there for a kind of, well, Arkansas, you know, we've won everything that we set out to win here in Arkansas. But they were settled in for a night nationally that was potentially close, but not victorious. And instead, they had absolutely a raucous time. By 9 o'clock, 9:30 Central Standard Time, that place was hopping. High fives, people were smiling, laughing. It was giddy.
Any thoughts about the impact on Arkansas, first, from the presidential election?
I think Governor Hutchinson, I think it's something you played earlier, something we played during the week, during Morning Edition, said that he was kind of surprised that he thought Donald Trump actually helped the down ballot contest. I mean, in terms of like things like actual policies, like repealing Obamacare, that would have a huge impact on the state legislature, which buys into Medicaid expansion, something that saves the state hundreds of millions of dollars. So there's going to be a whole bunch of impact to that. I just wanted to point out, of course, that one takeaway from the election is that Hillary Clinton, more people voted for her than Donald Trump, and Donald Trump is the president. So talk about like a rigged election system. But so that's important to point out that Hillary Clinton did win the popular vote. First female candidate for president, actually got more votes than the person who's president-elect. A few Arkansas outtakes I just thought I'd go ahead and mention. Hillary Clinton got 34%. Connor Eldridge got 36%. So another instance of a national Democrat kind of underperforming a state-level Democrat. Just a couple percentage points. But it was curious to me that Connor Eldridge, who spent a lot of money in his campaign at TV commercials, was pretty organized, professional politician, he got 36%. Meanwhile, in the second district, Diane Curry, who lost to French Hill, the Republican, she also got 36%, despite raising almost no money, having almost no campaign appearances or television ads, but same support level. And of course, Pulaski County is the stalwart blue county in Arkansas. And that kind of looks like the nationwide election map, where if it's an urban county, it probably votes for a Democrat. If it's a rural county, they probably didn't. And Bozeman didn't have any name recognition going into this. That was his big critique. Donald Trump, of course, had a lot of name recognition, but they both got about 60%. So it appears to still be the case in Arkansas that if you're a Republican, you're pretty much going to get that level of support. And if you're a Democrat, you're pretty much going to get that level of support. But the big takeaways for Arkansas for the election also were, of course, those three ballot issues that were passed.
Yeah, and we'll get to that in a second. But very interesting what you point out about the case four. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, four ballot issues that passed.
Four ballot issues.
Issue two, of course.
But you mentioned that Eldridge, despite having as much support, got about the same as Diane Curry, just suggesting it's gotten even more toxic to have a D next to your name there on the ballot machine.
And Eldridge tried to separate himself from President Obama during this campaign, but he rose to prominence because he was appointed by the president to be a U.S. attorney for the Western District of Arkansas, and he supports a lot of the president's policies.
Why don't we hear just a little bit here from Senator Bozeman and Connor Eldridge. Bozeman will get to have a second term in the Senate in January, and he said on election night that he's ready to focus on things that matter to Republicans.
Things like the regulatory burden that's on our businesses that are putting a wet blanket again and costing us jobs. Healthcare cost. The average Arkansan now has seen his premiums go up dramatically with $5,000-$10,000 deductibles. We've got to come together and solve those problems.
And he made the case for unity during his victory speech. Eldridge pledged to stay engaged in the state's future, and there was some discussion that he could still be a candidate in the future, that he's kind of a rising star among Democrats, if there is such a thing in this environment in Arkansas. But here's part of what he told supporters after the defeat.
I'm encouraged by the number of voters who I was able to get to know, who put party aside and came up to me repeatedly and said, you know, I'm a Republican, I'm a Democrat, and I'm an independent. I see something new and positive in your campaign.
Have we heard anything about what he plans to do next?
Yeah, he said he would still be active in the party, so I guess we'll see in the next cycle what comes around, if he chooses a different office to run for. Key going for him, he's got kind of like John Burkhalter, who ran for lieutenant governor, didn't do so well, as they're both independently wealthy. Connor Eldridge poured a lot of his own money into this campaign, so he has that infrastructure in place. He has the political support from the remaining Democrats in the state, ones that used to be in the Clinton administration and ones that worked through Obama administration. So he has all of that network to do all of those things again.
And one final point I'll make on the presidential race is that despite Hillary Clinton spending nearly two decades in Arkansas, that wasn't reflected a bit. She came across like a former New York senator.
Although the Republicans might say it showed off just exactly how it should have, because Arkansans know Hillary, and that's why she got as little support as she got. This is the last Eldridge thought, since we're never going to talk about him again. So, to me, it's kind of strange to run for Democrats who they know they're not really going to win any elections right now. And instead of promoting like an idea or something that distinguishes them from the Republicans, they didn't to build on the future to maybe inspire the youth or something. Eldridge's campaign was about John Bozeman won't debate me. And for a little bit, it was about how Donald Trump was bad, but I think he might have realized I have to win Donald Trump supporters if I'm going to win. So it wasn't about a policy or anything like that. If anything, though, it maybe was about civility. That was kind of his argument.
Well, the only real drama, at least among races in Arkansas, was the medical marijuana proposal, narrowly defeated 4 years ago, but this time issue six. Actually won. The final results, 53% for, 47% against. David Couch was the attorney who spearheaded this effort, the constitutional amendment. There was also issue seven, the ballot question, knocked off a week and a half before Election Day. And Bobby, you spoke with him. Maybe we'll hear a quick cut from that interview. But he said that this was a sign that this medical marijuana deserves some legitimacy.
You know, I think that upon reflection in history at some point in time, people are going to look at Arkansas as a state that really kind of turned the tide, at least for medical marijuana legalization pretty much nationwide. I mean, if you look at all the other states that have legalized medical marijuana, they're blue states. And so we're really the first real red state to have done that.
Yeah, the first state in the South to pass medical marijuana.
Yeah, it's really remarkable. This whole election's been kind of remarkable for something's going against type. So one of the things I think that people believe is that folks who would describe themselves as Christian conservative are opposed to legalization of marijuana on any level, medical or recreational. Folks who are left of center are, in favor, and libertarians might be in favor. And you saw this ballot issue winning 53-47. I mean, that's fairly close. The last 4 years ago, it lost by 2 points. So this year, it won by six. That would seem to be in keeping with trends toward lenience on the issue nationally. But Couch is right to point out that we are the first Bible Belt state to legalize marijuana for medicinal purposes, and that people might look back in the future, if in fact there's more and more legalization, folks might look back and say, well, Arkansas was a bit of a tipping point. Of course, we weren't first, But we were first among a solidly kind of red state, Christian conservative state to pass the measure.
And the one of the key opponents to this, people who spoke out against it leading up to Election Day, was Arkansas Surgeon General Greg Bledsoe, who said while he fought to try and defeat this, he'll now kind of take his role as Surgeon General to implement this.
We'll sit down with all the people involved, the regulators, the folks that are advocates for this, and we'll try to figure out a way to protect the consumers, educate patients and patients' families about the risk of marijuana so they can make an informed decision, and we'll go about it to implement this in a way that tries to protect consumers and patients as best as possible.
And just after he said that, the Surgeon General said that he didn't think that legalizing medical marijuana, that the silver lining on that cloud was that it would bring revenue into the state. He thought that the money that would be lost from increases in law enforcement, health care, and even education as young people experiment with marijuana who wouldn't otherwise, unless medical marijuana was legalized, that we would pay ultimately. David Couch, the proponent of the bill, he thought that was ridiculous. He pointed out that young people right now have access to, you know, booze, cigarettes, and prescription pills that are laying around the house. There's no reason to believe that legal medical marijuana would somehow create a swell of adolescent marijuana abuse. So I think the debate's going to continue, and I think it's going to continue for, you know, maybe a couple few years on as we investigate exactly how this plays out.
Well, interesting to see this immediately having steps taken to implement. Governor Asa Hutchinson said on Wednesday he was appropriating $3 million from his rainy day fund to go toward the Department of Finance and Administration and Department of Health as the agencies build the infrastructure to regulate and tax medical marijuana. And here's what he said during a press conference.
It's going to take us some time to develop some very complex regulations on a critically important topic and to have them go through legislative review. It will be nigh unto impossible or very difficult to meet the deadlines that's in the amendment.
Oh, yeah, and what he's referring to as far as deadlines, I mean, those two agencies that you mentioned, the Department of Health and Department of Finance and Administration and its subsidiary, Alcohol Beverage Control, have about 120 days to adopt and develop rules and regulations about medical marijuana. And those regulations have to be approved by the legislature. The governor, as well as the Speaker of the House and the President pro tem, have to appoint a marijuana commission that will also oversee the regulatory process. And I guess one of the other points of the governor is that 120-day window, I mean, that's going to be right smack dab in the middle of the legislative session that's coming up. So there will be a lot of other business that legislators will be having to consider. And it's going to be an interesting process for sure. I think, you know, like the Finance and Administration has to oversee the taxing and regulation of the dispensaries. I think there's going to allowed under the amendment up to 40 dispensaries are allowed in the state. Four cultivation centers will also be overseeing that. Department of Health will be focusing more on the patient side, issuing identification cards and registry cards and things like that. So,
I'm going to try to bookend the conversation on medical marijuana here. So wish me luck, Bobby.
Good luck.
Okay. I mean, I think the results of this election compared to the last one, even though it just narrowly failed in 2012, is the conversation this country has changed so much about this and the reality in other states has changed so much. Even the opposition this time, even though it's highly orchestrated, it wasn't just family council, it was the governor, the Surgeon General, the Department of Health, and DFA. They all had highly orchestrated press conferences, free media, purchase media. But even their argument kind of implied this total shift that they acknowledge that people want this. It started out with saying, yes, there are medicinal properties to marijuana, which is like not an argument you would have heard 8 years ago from Republicans or Asa Hutchinson. Instead, the argument was it just needs to be regulated by the FDA. And so that was kind of the main case. And even that's, I can understand why it might not work with Arkansans, because Republicans have been saying for years that the federal government is the problem. Let states take responsibility for this kind of stuff, and that's what this law does.
Yeah, and to that point, it's kind of ironic because in that press conference that you played a clip from, Michael, Governor Hutchinson said there needs to be, I don't remember his exact words, but a national solution to, you know, medical marijuana, i.e. Congress has to enact some law, because he recognized the kind of shift of all the states going towards supporting medical marijuana. You know, as you mentioned, he's, you know, been critical that it's not regulated by the FDA. And he was also questioning whether or not the Trump administration, or, you know, what exactly their stance would be on medical marijuana. He noted that, you know, the Obama administration had basically granted a waiver to states to enact their own laws and hadn't really enforced the Controlled Substances Act. But, you know, we'll see what happens, I guess.
Well, another item from this election, Republicans continue to gain ground in the state legislature. And on Thursday morning, the newly elected members of the Arkansas House of Representatives picked their seats at the state capitol. House Speaker Jeremy Gillum, here a little rusty.
At this time, the House caucus for the 91st General Assembly I got tongue-tied. I was trying to remember what my script was there. Our House caucus is called to order. How about that? Let's just go there.
Yeah, and this is coming up to the session that begins next January, the 91st General Assembly. And you had seniority and committee assignments being made. And to either of you, you both, Chris, you were down there at the Capitol, and Jacob, you monitored much of it. Overall, we got what we expected, but there was one key surprise that Democrats will actually be in the majority in the committee that determines taxation, that will have a say in any kind of tax cut proposals that are put forward.
Yeah, and we should note, I mean, Republicans in this election took over. I mean, they almost have a supermajority in both chambers. They have 74 members in the House, I believe, and about 26 in the Senate. Despite that, you know, despite Democrats losing
26 out of 35, we should say.
Yeah, or having 26 out of 30, or, oh, excuse me. Yeah, 26 out of 35 in the Senate. Despite Democrats losing a large number of seats this election, they did make a concerted effort to try to get on that Revenue and Taxation Committee. The way they do those committee assignments is by congressional districts. So you have like legislators from the first congressional district in one room and legislators from the third congressional district in another, and so forth. The way I understand how they did it, these Democrats were kind of text messaging, trying to figure out, you know, where they can get a majority. I think they had planned this out, although, you know, Michael John Gray, the House Minority Leader, kind of was waffly about, you know, what their plan was when I talked to him. Taxation and Revenue Committee is likely to consider any tax cuts. Governor Asa Hutchinson had proposed $50 million in tax cuts with his budget. There's another tax cut proposal of $106 million by Senator Bart Hester to low and high income earners. And so that's likely to be a big issue in the legislative session. When I talked to, you know, Michael John Gray, the House Minority Leader, he basically said, well, I mean, the reason we did this is because, you know, we feel that there should be some responsible management of government. So
the revenue stream and funding and the reasonable management and the responsible management of our tax dollars has always been a high priority. And, you know, there are members that are on the committee that it was a priority for them, and we do committee selection by seniority and how they fell.
We also had Republican Representative Dan Douglas commenting on this. He also has a seat on the committee and said that this upcoming session will be dominated by a conservative Republican agenda. Didn't seem too worried.
The thing to remember, we all, whether Democrat or Republican, we all represented in the House, about 30,000 members are in our district, and those members are from the far right to the far left and everything in between. So we consider all legislation that's brought forth by members.
That's probably true. Everyone will get a shot at their bill, probably most committees. Everyone won't get very far.
Yeah.
One big change from the last session is now the Democrats have piled up their numbers in revenue and tax. That means their numbers in every other committee are way lower. So in the last session, the Democrats broke even in education committee. And so that firewall is totally gone now. So here comes the charter school legislation. There's nothing to stop any of that from happening anymore. Lieutenant Governor Tim Griffin, Arkansas blog, posted some tweets from him. He was really annoyed and ticked off that this was a possibility. He thought it was. And Steve Bronner at Talk Business and Politics has a good article with the House Majority Leader Matt Pitch from Fort Smith, where he kind of says, well, we didn't really want that to happen. We just kind of dropped the ball. We weren't organized. So,
yeah, Tim Griffin said in his tweets, the committees should reflect the voters' will, and the old way of doing things has got to go. And he also said, voters gave Republicans legislative majorities. We should not ignore them and give to the Democrats just because Democrats did it right. Just doesn't make it right. He wrote on Twitter, and there's some response, like Greg Letting, a Democrat out of Fayetteville, state representative, said, we operated within the confines of the system. You don't surrender your obligation to govern on account of minority status.
Well, finally, as we record this, it is Veterans Day, and had a big ceremony here in Little Rock. Jacob, it included the opening of a new home for veterans designed to provide care for veterans toward the end of their life. And tell me what all went on.
Well, as we begin this segment, let's strike up the military band. They played the different songs for each different branch of the military, and everybody would stand up when it was their song. And there were a few hundred people there. It was pretty packed. They had like stands brought in so people could sit and things like that. It's kind of a more eventful Veterans Day for the Arkansas Department of Veterans Affairs than normal because of that groundbreaking for that new veterans home. It replaces one in Little Rock that was closed down in 2012. It was kind of an aged facility that needed a lot of repairs. This is the first facility in Arkansas that's built specifically to house veterans instead of a repurposed building or something like that. So I spoke with one veteran, Michael Ritchie, who's one of the hundreds of veterans in attendance. He's now a senior commander for the VFW in Jacksonville. He said overall he's been pretty pleased with how he's been treated in the healthcare system.
It's always been positive. I had no problems getting my claim pushed through. You know, I'm 100% disabled myself, service connection, and it just went real smooth for me. I've heard stories from others that it wasn't that way, but me personally, I have no complaints with the system.
So he thinks care is pretty good. This is off campus from Fort Roots, also in the VA Center in North Little Rock, but he likes the new homes that they built as well.
Oh, way much, much better than the last home we had here.
Arkansas has 250,000 veterans. This is a 31-acre site, so it's built with lots of expansion in mind. There's lots of green fields around the new homes. It's 31 acres. There's individual homes are built that each hold 12 residents, and they each have their own room and bathroom in there. It costs $20.5 million. A majority of that came from the federal government. The state also pitched in about $8 or $9 million. Lots of political dignitaries there, of course, as always. Asa Hutchinson was the keynote speaker, so to speak. He quoted Ronald Reagan.
But he once said, I don't have to tell you how fragile this precious gift of freedom is. Every time we hear, watch, or read the news, we are reminded that liberty is a rare commodity in this world, end quote. And that was said while he was president in the 1980s. As you watch the news today, with challenges across the globe, we can say that liberty remains at stake, and we have to rely upon those in the military, those that have served our country, to be strong and vigilant to protect our freedoms. And today, we honor our veterans. How do we honor them? We honor them by giving them the opportunity, first of all, to use their skills and leadership in the private sector.
I just kept that last bit in because Asa Hutchinson can't help himself. He always has to talk about economic development. Okay, so I didn't want to inject politics into this, but I was forced to by Asa Hutchinson's comments. He did not mention specifically these six women on the Arkansas Razorbacks basketball team who knelt during the national anthem, who have now since said they will now stand up, and several state senators threatened to cut the UA budget over it, but he did mention it.
We honor our veterans by honoring the flag of the United States of America, by standing at attention when we sing our national anthem, and by living our freedoms every day. And we have to be patient and understanding, but we must teach the next generation that the flag is about freedom, but it's also representing and precious to those veterans who have learned in their military service patriotism, love of country, and the willingness to sacrifice all, and that willingness to sacrifice needs to be respected, and we need to teach that. We honor our veterans.
And how did Michael Ritchie, the veteran we heard from earlier, what did he think about those comments and about the flag kneeling controversies around the country?
Those people have too much time on their hands, you know, personally. They probably haven't done anything in their life but complain. And I'm one, you can't judge anyone if you haven't walked in their shoes. So, you know, and as far as disgracing our flag, hey, if you're not happy where you're at, there's exit points out of this country. You know, you can leave. But to disgrace our flag like some do, it's just unacceptable, and there should be a law against it.
Well, the chancellor of the University of Arkansas Fayetteville campus, Joe Steinmetz, said that he wants to use this as a learning experience, even introducing, I'm not sure if it's classes or kind of a program around it, but looking at freedom of speech issues, and saying this is a good opening for a debate over these kinds of issues.
Yeah, you know, I guess the point out to anyone listening, it's clearly totally legal, and that's what the First Amendment is about. You can express yourself however you want. It doesn't matter if you're a student athlete, an employee. You don't have to do anything with the flag you don't want to. But it was kind of funny to hear Ritchie say that they weren't hardworking. They're SEC athletes. A lot of these people are sports people who dedicate their entire lives toward work, literally physically working for a job. Here's Senator Cotton, though. He was in attendance. I asked him afterward. He had a very kind of respectful, measured answer.
Well, I stand for the anthem, and I salute the flag, and I encourage every American to do that. I understand that people have disagreements with this or that politician and this or that government. I think there's ways that you can express those disagreements without causing so much controversy or offending so many of our fellow citizens.
And Asa Hutchinson also gave a brief history of Veterans Day, his first Armistice Day, anniversary of World War I. It was about world peace. Then we had a few more wars. It became about veterans.
Well, with that, I guess we'll wrap up the podcast for this week. I'm Michael Heplin.
I'm Chris Hickey.
And I'm Jacob Kaufman.
You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Our theme song is by our own Chris Hickey. KUAR is an editorially independent service of the University of Arkansas at Little Rock.